Welcome. This is So Much More Than Gender.
Hi, this is your host, Aaron Swenson, and this is the third episode of So Much More Than Gender. Welcome back. Today I'm going to share with you a bit from my unpublished book. Maybe you publishers out there will find it good enough to publish. We'll see. Anyway, it's about a period of time in my life, almost immediately after I came out to myself, when I began to really suffer and struggle with what it meant to be myself. This was at a time after my sisters and I had moved from Buffalo to Atlanta, Georgia. And at the time we were spending our summers back in Buffalo, my sisters went to live with our aunt in West Seneca, and I went to live with my grandparents, my grandmother and grandfather, in Elma. So this story is a little picture of what I was like just about the time that these were going on. It starts with a dream sequence, which you might understand. Please enjoy. Thank you very much. The beginning of the story actually starts with a dream, so I'm going to try to talk a little bit slower and just give you the idea of it. A fantasy, a road, more like a path, really, imbued with mystical properties, I walk, finding wonderful gifts along the way. Forbidden gifts, and I don't carry them, but more acquire them. The gifts appear both dangerous and exciting, and I'm strangely filled with joy as each gift becomes a part of me. That is, until I reach the top of a ridge. I don't know if it's halfway to where. I stop in my tracks. The path ahead slopes downward soon, disappearing into an enchanted wood. As I gaze into trees, both tall and twisted, I sense a foreboding. The trees are whispering to me. I seem to know where the road leads. A desirable and a forbidden place. The way is filled with awe and danger and hope. I want to go, but can't out of fear. I turn to retrace my steps, tears stinging, each gift replaced carefully back where I found it, gently, like placing a fallen egg back into its nest, close to where I started now, and the wind sings in the trees. The singing grows louder. My eyes open to the dingy, unfinished attic that was my bedroom for the summer. The wind off the lake whistled in the old screen as I recalled the dream. I turned over in the rollaway and stretched, looking out the screened window. The trim white curtains laced with my grandmother's tatting, a stark contrast to the old unpainted wood of the window frame. I wondered if she had placed them there just for me, for my summer visit. I stretched in the bed and arose, aware that the morning sun was climbing in the sky. The house was quiet. Grandpa must have already taken Grandma to her work and returned, for the sounds of his tacking in the small upholstery shop punctuated the music of the wind in the screens. Pulling on my jeans, t-shirt, and keds, I began descending the narrow stairs to the dining room below and stopped at the landing. I gazed in the mirror there, looking for something. For a moment, I saw something different in the reflection, and I remembered the dream again and wondered what was wrong with me. The house was quiet, and I could hear the sound of my heart pounding, the sound going along with the old cuckoo clock in the dining room. I made it to the bottom of the stairs in spite of the spinning in my head. Breakfast had been laid out for me, fresh strawberries from Grandpa's garden and boxes of cereal arranged carefully in front of my place. I read the comics and ate shredded wheat with strawberries and felt fear in the pit of my stomach. Fear that quickly turned to guilt, then back to fear again. I felt my face flush and my body tense in the warm sun shining through the dining room window. I mowed the grass the day before, so there was nothing on my work list for today. And no one would be looking for me until noon, when Grandpa and I would have what Grandpa called dinner. In Grandpa's world, the evening meal was called supper. Out in the dining room window, across the little 7-acre farm to the wood line at the back, I saw crows, 5 of them, perched on the top branch of the tallest tree. I didn't hear their call until I saw them, but there it was, the distinctive caw, caw that made my tummy feel butterflies and that called me to the woods. This time I knew in my heart I would not turn back. After washing my dishes, I stepped into the backyard toward the woods and stopped at the little outhouse behind the barn to pee. Skipper, Grandpa's Airedale, peeked into the open door and barked. Sensing my restlessness, Skipper was saying she wanted in on the journey, and so the adventure began. Grandpa's farm was on a plateau above a small gorge cut by Casanova Creek. The woods at the back of the farm were actually the top of the ridge that dropped dramatically for several hundred feet into the gorge. The embankment was lush with tall oak and hickory, the ground covered with mandrake. I had been there many times. I would often retreat to the ridge where a fallen hickory had created a cradle in its branch, a place where I could lie and be quiet. Today, though, there would be no resting in the rustic cradle. I descended, Skipper always near, all the way to the bottom of the gorge. The large trees gave way to sumac on the edge of the bottom, where the land lay flat. Milkweed and thistle covered the landscape as far as I could see, which wasn't far because the plants were all taller than I. The dense growth and soupy ground stopped me, but not for long. I was driven as though fulfilling a destiny that called like a siren. I knew that my shoes and clothing would be covered with the evidence of this venture as I stepped boldly into the tarry muck and the thistles to the unknown beyond. The smell of the black muck was musty and strong. It seemed like miles through the dense, tall weeds growing in the swampy earth, but it was probably no more than 100 yards before the ground firmed up and the weeds ended at a well-worn track, beyond which stood a field of tall, sweet corn. I was disoriented. How could this primeval place be cultivated? The track bore the markings I recognized as tractor treads. This was someone's farm. Disappointment washed over me, but I wasn't sure where it came from. Looking across the wide field of cornrows, I could see another stand of tall trees. I sense hope beyond. I crossed at an angle to the straight rows, careful not to damage any of the tall stalks that were already growing silk in the small ears. The cultivated earth here was also musty, but tinged with the sweet green aroma of the corn. As I grew closer to the trees, my heart began to race, when I heard a constant low hush, a whispering that called to me. When I finally emerged from the cornfield to the edge of the trees, I could see through to the creek on the other side. I walked through the trees oblivious to the stick tights on my jeans. The woods finally ended at the edge of the creek. There it was. I had known the creek was there for a long time, My sisters and I had occasionally splashed in a small waterfall a couple of miles downstream where the road crossed. Seeing it here for the first time, in the middle of what I thought was wilderness, filled my heart. This was no ordinary creek. It had been formed over the ages as the water cut through the earth to the hard shale that was the bedrock of this part of New York State. When it reached the shale, the water spread, cleaning the flat plates of hard rock until the creek became a wide expanse of large pools and numerous small, beautiful waterfalls. The tall trees at either side of the creek muffled the sound. It was as if God spoke softly through the falling water, and my heart listened with joy. A small shudder passed through my body, but I was not cold. My quickened heart slowed as I approached the water and was overcome by the experience of being there. Without even thinking, I slipped into a quiet pool, clothes and all, and emerged in the middle of the creek on a boulder just big enough to allow me to dry in the morning sun. The warmth of the sun penetrated the water's chill and comforted me. Skipper followed, finding deep water where she could swim. Whatever fear or hesitation I had felt disappeared. I felt safe in a strange new way. I had long ago been baptized as a baby at the Elma Methodist Church, but this was a baptism apart. I remembered those words in the Gospels that describe Jesus' baptism by John in the Jordan. This place became a mystical connection for me through the centuries to that first baptism. And this baptism pronounced no name for me and no gender. It had seemed like a long trek, and I had no way of telling time except for the sun, which had climbed high in the sky. Missing dinner with Grandpa was unthinkable, so I quickly gathered myself and began the return trip. This time, there was no creek to wash off the muck, and both Skipper and I were covered with the stuff, along with hundreds of the stick tights, when we finally arrived back at the house where Grandpa was waiting. When he saw us, he shook his head and said, "Where in Judas' name have you been? It looks like you were playing in the pig pen, and you are going to have to get every one of those stick tights off of Skipper." I felt a familiar shame, and remember the first time Grandpa had used the name of Judas. It was a long time ago, before we moved to Atlanta. It was when I was 6 years old, after we moved into the house in the woods, a new home for our young family. Dad worked hard with the person he called the Builder, a name that had confused me, for it seemed that Dad spent far more time on the construction site than had the Builder. But the house was finished, and we moved in, Mom, Dad, and my two younger sisters, and me, of course. Dad's work on the house had not come to an end, for he busied himself working in the yard, clearing the woods and planting grass. I spent many hours watching him with his two-bladed axe, felling trees, both small and large. He then cut and split them into a very large pile of firewood. As spring settled over the landscape, the yard emerged green and beautiful, the product of Dad's hard and passionate work. I don't really know why I came to the deed. Perhaps it was because I admired Dad's devoted sculpting of the landscape and I wanted to be like him. Maybe I just liked the power in felling a tree, the satisfying crack as the trunk finally bends to human will. Maybe, as I was later to explain, I really did want to be helpful, which would have meant that I believe Dad left that beautiful tree in the front yard just for 6-year-old me to fell. I knew that using the two-bladed axe was out. Dad had emphatically explained that this was a dangerous tool, and I could easily lose a finger or a foot with the blades Dad always kept carefully sharpened. No, I would have to find a safer instrument for this project. I found the rock hammer Dad often let me use because there was little damage I could do to either the hammer or to myself. It had a vertical blade, too, like Dad's axe. It was not nearly as sharp and, in fact, was quite blunt. The fact that trying to fell a tree with this hammer would be much like carving a large roast with a small, dull butter knife didn't even slow me down. As soon as breakfast was over, I scurried to the yard to begin my project. I began my devoted cutting, beating on the trunk of that tree with a hammer driven by 6-year-old energy. To my childlike imagination, the tree was huge, at least a foot in diameter and 50 or 60 feet tall. In actuality, it could not have been more than 3 or 4 inches in diameter and 10 or 15 feet tall. It was big enough, though, that later, as the family gave witness to my accomplishment, there would be numerous remarks about how incredible it was that I had cut this tree down with a little rock hammer. Such was my devotion, for it took me most of the morning delivering blow after blow to that living trunk, banging and flailing away at my project until, at long last, the beautiful tree began to give way. The movement was ever so slight at first. A few more blows, however, and the tree really began to fall, its leaves sweeping across the sky it would never grace again. The horror was immediate. The vision of the once graceful tree lying across the yard like a heap of dirty clothes seared itself across my heart, a vision I would never lose. The ache in my arms moved quickly to my tummy. I had been planning to announce my victory over the tree as soon as I felled it because I wanted the praise of my mother, whose attention I so desperately needed. But seeing the little tree lying in disarray across the yard was not a sight I felt proud of at all. My dreams of earning the love and pride of my parents lay strewn about the yard with the disheveled branches of the small maple. I felt shame and wanted to hide. I wanted to pretend that that green carcass did not exist. I wanted to go back in time so that I could see what would happen and so not commit this grievous sin. I succeeded in none of this, for it was only moments before my mother stood over me, wondering out loud about what had gotten into me, angry and hurt and afraid of what would happen when Dad arrived home from work. When Dad got home, it was far worse than I had even imagined. Dad showed not the first sign of anger. He almost wept as he told me that this had been his favorite tree in the entire yard. He had protected this little maple from the dangers of the builders, bulldozers, and trucks as the builder had worked to build the house. He fertilized it and covered its wounds with tree salve. He felt sad that the little tree was gone. I felt sad. Later that day, as Grandpa viewed my project, he exclaimed, "For the love of Judas," Grandpa said, "how could you have done all of that with this little hammer?" "Who is Judas?" I asked. I had never heard of Judas before. Being only 6, the topic of Judas Iscariot was probably considered to be well beyond my child's intellect. But now I learned that Judas was a bad man, someone who had done something awful to Jesus, someone who was not worthy of love, someone evil. People who are bad are like Judas, who could never receive love because he had done such a bad thing. I was confused, and the deep sense of shame in Grandpa's description penetrated my skin like thistles. I wanted Jesus to love me. On this terrible day, though, I felt a far deeper kinship with Judas than with the beloved disciple, and love seemed far away. Back on the porch, I picked the stick tights off of both Skipper and me, and I pulled off my muddy jeans, also covered head to toe with stick tights, and went in to dinner with Grandpa. We had leftover pork roast from the night before. It was cold, but tasted really good. There was a warmth inside me that made Grandpa's tirade fade in my memory. Somehow, it just didn't matter. So Much More Than Gender is about the actual lives of people who are transgender and gender nonconforming. The point is to present the real lives of the TGNC community. Some of us are exceptional in one way or another. Most of us are ordinary in most ways. All of us are human in every way. So the series presents both my story and the stories of many others in the TGNC community. Thanks for listening. If you would like to communicate with us, our email address is somuchmore@aaronswenson.com. That is so much more, no spaces, no periods, at erinswenson.com. Thank you for now.